You're listening to a Towson University podcast.
Welcome to On the Mark, where we have candid conversations about meaningful and consequential work happening here at Towson University. I'm Mark Ginsburg. It's my honor to serve as president of Towson University, located, of course, in Towson, Maryland. And on this podcast, we're introducing you to members of our university community who are engaged in high-impact teaching, research, and student success practices. Today, I'm pleased to welcome a guest who is truly shaping the future of cybersecurity education, my colleague, Dr. Blair Taylor. Dr. Taylor is a nationally recognized leader in cybersecurity education and workforce development, and she serves as the director of Towson University Center for Interdisciplinary and Innovative Cybersecurity, known as Cyber for All. She is also a pioneer in our Department of Computer and Information Sciences. Dr. Taylor has received over $14 million in federal funding and leads two national initiatives that are helping to build the next generation of cybersecurity professionals, the National Cybersecurity Curriculum Task Force and the Cyber AI Project for the National Science Foundation and the National Security Agency. Dr. Taylor is also co-executive director and co-founder of SecureEd, a nonprofit organization that grew from Towson University with the mission of securing the nation through education. SecureEd operates Clark, the largest open-source platform for free cybersecurity curricula. She holds a bachelor's degree in mathematical science and a master's degree in computer science from Johns Hopkins and a doctorate in applied information technology right here from Towson University. Blair, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. And I know that you're doing terrific work in cyber and cybersecurity, and cyber threat is one of the most significant issues and one of those significant challenges I know we face in our modern day society. So maybe we can start off by just talking a little bit about what that is, what cybersecurity is, and a little bit about the threat that cyber threats pose.
The current landscape.
Yeah, the current landscape. Right.
So cybersecurity has been a problem really since we started to become interconnected. Now that people can access critical infrastructure remotely, that's when cybersecurity became an issue. And interestingly, I've been doing this work for over 20 years, and there's a lot of talk that AI is going to solve the problem. And it scares me a lot because I actually think the problem's gotten worse.
Uh-huh. And with AI?
AI, first of all, is going to help us with both offense and defense, obviously,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
But I think there's a couple things going on. I think that, first of all, the government is a little weakened at this point in time in terms of, you know, the current state of affairs. Also, the job market is so bad that students are veering away from computer science and cyber. So I have a lot of worries about that because cybersecurity is, if you look in the last month, major companies have been attacked, much more visible. I mean, the cyber attacks have always been getting larger and more critical, but within the last month, a lot of very visible attacks on Land Rover, for example.
Huh.
And there was an AWS interruption of power. And I always think to myself, was that cyber related? But it's just that the current situation, I'm just afraid that people are turning their focus too much to AI and the cyber is considered, you know, solved. And that is by far the case. I think one of the other, I just lectured today about my favorite subject, which is software security.
Mm.
And that is a huge aspect of cyber because most cyber attacks happen because of vulnerabilities. And a lot of, we're so reliant on software.
System vulnerabilities, hardware kind of things.
Well, I'm really correct, any kind of vulnerability. Uh-huh. Most attacks are, you know, you don't drive through a perfectly good brick wall. You look for a way around it, right?
Where are the cracks?
Or the cracks, exactly. So software, which is so ubiquitous and used in everything from critical infrastructure, financial structures, hospitals, is inherently not secure.
It really fuels the economy.
And the people who wrote it, first of all, it's very hard to measure cybersecurity because there's no profit. You only know if it worked if nothing happened, right? So it doesn't fit into the functionality requirements. So the software, many of the people who develop software were not taught secure coding techniques. So this has been a huge worry and a huge source of vulnerability. Now, AI can help. I don't mean to say that it cannot, but AI is still very new in these areas, and There's this thing called vibe coding, which is AI created code. And
created by the AI software.
You use AI systems to to just, you talk to it and create code that runs. Not only is that code not efficient, the code is inherently not secure.
And how accurate is it even to start with that?
The same as any AI.
You know, that's what the people have been critical of AI, it provides a context, but oftentimes, even though the context may be correct, the specifics may be incorrect.
And I think that's, you know, these things will evolve.
Sure.
And they will all be domain specific and they all get better. But right now, it's not pretty.
Sure. You know, it's been said by some, in fact, as I was preparing to talk with you today, that cybersecurity is, in effect, a national crisis.
International, global.
Yeah, in fact, globally, I've read recently too that there's estimated there's something like 600 million attacks each day worldwide. That's almost unbelievable to think about. It's like thinking about infinity. What does that really mean? And how do you grab hold of that kind of enormity of problem?
Well, I mean, it's a tough problem.
It's a very tough problem.
And let's look at the war in Ukraine. I mean, most wars now today are hybrid. So there's usually a cyber attack prior to a kinetic attack. So they may, you know, bring the power grid down and then attack a bridge. So, you know, it has a tremendous effect. Both, you know, critical infrastructure is the big worry. People say, what do you worry about at night? Like, our water systems are incredibly vulnerable, partially because they're physically weak. They're distributed.
Yeah.
And the other thing.
Things that'll make a difference in a big scale way.
Yes.
Big issues that affect big parts of the population, maybe the entire population.
Well, the power grid is the most.
The power grid's a good example.
Absolutely.
Of that.
There's no other system that does not depend on the power grid. And we had known presence from nation states in the power grid, you know, known for 10 years. And they're there now. You know?
So if there's vulnerability with the power grid, that suggests that there could be enormous complications.
Outages.
And I think what you're inferring. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that there absolutely are vulnerabilities with things like the power grid.
Absolutely. And another area, which is one of the ways the power grid, they don't necessarily attack an actual power station. They use the supply chain. So, you know, this vendor that they're using, that many people are using, and it could be a patch or something like that.
And that's a route into the creating greater vulnerabilities through the third parties that are related
exactly.
to the whole.
Software supply chain is considered a huge vulnerability. Yeah. It's really hard to know what you're using.
It doesn't take much. It's like a mouse getting into a house. Probably takes a small little crack.
Well, actually, generally most attacks are multi-tiered, you know. But
what does that really mean? What's a multi-tiered
attack?
So
they try on many, many facets, and they try many. There's countries that literally spend, you know, invest a lot of infrastructure, a lot of money, and a lot of time just attacking a particular our water supply, for example. There's probably a building in some country that just is working on doing that. So they try, you know, they do reconnaissance. What are the weak parts? They try contractors. They try, you know, there's multiple tiers toward it. But what's funny, I told you today was Cyber Day at the Cyber Center.
Right.
And OTS came over.
OTS is our Office of Technology Services.
That's correct. And they said their number one problem remains phishing. So sometimes it's the same old problem.
That's really the human element you're talking about,
that's
right?
That's the human element, but that's the way in.
So describe for us, people may not understand or know what phishing is. What does phishing in the cyber world mean? And how is it actually executed?
Well, so phishing, most people know that phishing is an email sent that is used to be, in the good old days, was poorly spelled and you could spot it and it looked suspicious. Well, guess what? AI makes phishing look, you know, brilliant, but... Office of Technology Service has something called the fish tank. And even though they have filters on suspicious fish, and I'm sure that there's many phishing emails that are being sent that we don't even see, but some still get through, and they have something called the fish tank. And they showed me one that was about a homework that was graded. And then the student was supposed to switch on a click on a form and then ask them for their password and their email. And then they get their creds and they, you know, do identity theft and that type of thing.
So I've often been told that don't click on things
if you
get an attachment. About if you just get an email and you open the email?
That should be okay.
That should be okay. It's clicking on an attachment.
An attachment or a link.
And then the attacker, the person who's doing the phishing, would be able to get into the systems that you're working with. Is that right?
Well, it depends. It could be spyware they're planning. It could be malware they're planning.
And tell us what those things mean, too.
So spyware is, they're both types of malware, but spyware is a software program that would be plan it on your computer to perhaps catch your keystrokes, to try to grab your passwords, to try to grab your credentials. It's a very lucrative practice now to do cybercrime. So as long as there's money, it's going to continue. So, and we don't, it's also very hard. The other thing with a hack or somebody who attacks you, it's very hard to determine, to give attribution. You don't know where it came from. You don't know who it came from. Ransomware attacks are very prevalent in schools, hospitals. Education's a huge target, and hospitals are a huge target.
So you would think, just statistically, with about estimated 600 million attacks each day, that there's a certain proportion that are going to hit ground. They're going to get through.
It's not a question of if. It's a question of when.
Not a question of – that's really prophetic. It's not a question of if. It's a question of when. So what that infers, if I'm hearing you right, that we're all very vulnerable.
We are. The educational institutions are very vulnerable. I attended a conference last week in Tampa called Cyber Bay, which kind of scared me, you know, which I guess is part of the reason for these conferences. But one of the things that they said is, you know, we have incident response plans, right? That's part of what you're supposed to do. You talked about getting hacked. So if a hospital gets hacked or a business gets hacked, you have an incident response plan in place.
Right, right.
Well, they're all digital. So they suggested that all these incident response plans be printed in hard copy. So in the event that we have a ransomware attack or we have a denial of service attack or we're shut down, that we have the ability to access our incident response plan in some type of paper format. So that's kind of a throwback.
So they're not inaccessible. They become accessible for you.
Yes.
So what you're really suggesting, and it's another question I've had for you, is that, you know, we hear a lot about the evolution of technology, about how not just our computer systems, but our ability to use technology and the technology themselves are evolving so fast, very, mm-hmm. very quickly. So my question is, how has the landscape, or what about the landscape has changed for the cybersecurity world as the evolution of our technologies continue to grow?
Well, there's a couple of, there's things that have happened. There's things that are in the process of happening. There's also quantum down the road, which is going to make cryptography easier to hack.
Quantum's a word that people are using, throwing around a lot. Help us understand what that actually means.
Essentially, what
is quantum in this world?
Essentially, it means very, very fast computers working at speeds that we can't even imagine, and processing at speeds that we can't imagine. So they can. Whereas, for example, the big worry, which they're a little ahead of, encryption. Encryption takes time to try to break the code. Well, yeah. With quantum, it can be done like that.
So it really is that what quantum is yielding is speed.
It's speed, primarily,
and
speed.
And greater power.
And
too?
Greater power.
Uh-huh.
And greater power. So anyway, the landscape has changed just in terms of more dependence on software. We critical infrastructure used to be somebody in a room and they had to go in person. And I think about COVID. I mean, people who were even traditionally in person, like a financial institution, they spent a lot of time getting everybody to work remotely. Well, guess what that did to the attack surface, you know?
Boy, they really increased the
yes.
opportunity.
So just a lot of different changes. I think as far as the landscape, I talked about hybrid warfare. They call cyber the fifth domain, and that is there's been some talk about even making cyber academies that are now AI will probably feature in. You don't use cyber without AI anymore, so which is great, you know. But guess what? AI has to be secure.
Well, you've been studying AI. Let's talk. I've got lots. This is just fascinating to me, but more than fascinating, it's pretty scary. I keep thinking as you're talking about the implications of this and. The vulnerabilities are, on one hand, are scary enough, but the implications of those vulnerabilities are even scarier. So you study AI. A researcher that's looking at AI and its implications for cyber. What?
You can't not study AI today, especially in a technology field. But I would like to talk about a specific project that Towson has led.
Great.
So Towson does a lot of work with NSA.
Yes.
And as you know, we're a center of academic excellence in cyber defense, which is about 430 approximately schools.
And that's a big deal for Towson to be recognized and part of that NSA recognition.
Well, the second designation we have is cyber operations.
Yeah.
And there's only 20 or 21 in the country. So
right. That's
a huge deal.
So what you're saying, and I want to point this out for listeners, so that Towson is not just a place where cyber is taking place. It's a national leader.
It's a
national leader in the cybersecurity, world of cybersecurity education
right.
and practice.
We're one of 20 20 or 21, depending on the day,
yeah.
20 schools that has this cyber operations designation. And that is to prepare students to become cyber operators. And part of that, you know, part of our advantage is how close we are to the three-letter agencies that do this important work. But a year ago, last March, they as I said, they have the current designation, cyber defense, cyber operations. And it's a very active community that does a decent amount of funding. And we meet several times a year and that type of thing. We were asked, Towson was asked to lead a new designation in cyber AI. We are pretty much the only place in the country that is doing any curriculum guidelines in AI, cyber AI specifically. So we had a very short timeline. This was last March, but NSF funded it. NSA asked us to do it as well.
Right.
We got a grant. And within a month, we had 200 people in the cyber center from all over the country coming up with what a program in cyber AI would look like. So we had 200 faculty. We spent 2 days that first time. And we literally, with, you know, sticky notes, whiteboards, blah, 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 we ended up coming up with two programs of study. Uh-huh. Now, this is tricky so I have to say this slowly. We came to the conclusion that we needed two programs of study. One was called Secure AI. Now, that means that the AI systems themselves have to be secure, right? Because if they're not, then we have a huge problem.
Then by definition, you're really in trouble.
And that is a very technical program. Secure AI is a very technical program. The second program of study that we came up with was AI for cyber. And that is using AI to do cyber. So that would be more tools oriented, a little less technical, more schools. It was an easier bar to reach per se. But within that after the first workshop, we came up with the two programs. We came up with about 30 knowledge units, which defined what that program should look like.
Uh-huh.
And then we met 3 and 4 times. And by September, we had a Stoneman draft. And we now have 5 schools that have been approved as pilots in cyber AI in the country and another 5 to 10 in the pipeline.
And now the question is, how do we best integrate it?
Now we need to figure out how to integrate it. We have several majors where we could put it in, but we're trying to figure out where to put AI also.
But it does sound like, back to the cutting edge concept, that this integration of cyber practice and the application and integration of AI is where the field is evolving. It's an area of not only potential, but of really absolute need.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm teaching intro cyber class, and I haven't taught it in a year and a half. And as I'm updating, literally every question is, and how does AI affect this? And how does AI, you know, I mean, again, and also the fundamental idea that these AI systems themselves have to be secure. It's sort of like having a security tool, like having an antivirus, and that itself has vulnerabilities. I mean, this is a big problem.
Yeah. You know, as long as you're talking about education, let's talk a little bit about not just our training programs here, which are, I think most people would say, world-class in their essence. But what are some of the, well, two things, I guess. We have a growing number of students who are interested in cyber. We provide a great number of people into the workforce in cyber. What are some of the things that they're learning, and what are some of the approaches that you take to training people to become cybersecurity professionals?
Well, I mean, we have about 6 different programs that include cyber of different capacities. The one that has the cyber operations designation is CS with a cyber operations track. So that is a very technical track. Again, that would train students to become.
And these are all at the undergraduate level.
That's an undergraduate. That what we do have. We also our MS and CS has this cybersecurity track, and our AIT MS also has a security track.
And we the
also
MS have are master's programs for those.
Master's. We also have a master's in Homeland Security.
Right.
And then we have a network security track in IT. So we have a variety of different ways of teaching cyber, and students can study cyber.
And as the students come through your programs, they come out of Towson, they finish 4 years or however long it takes them to achieve their bachelor's degrees, what are some of the roles that you're taking on?
Well, so we do heavily staff federal agencies. I mean, we have couple scholarship programs that have been very successful at Towson, where federal agencies either choose our students. They're very competitive. Very competitive for the students to get into. And then we have another one where students find a federal or state job, and the scholarships, there's 2 of them, CyberCorps and CSA, and they both pay full tuition, and additionally, they pay a stipend. But the student, it's like a scholarship for service. The student has to, each year they get the scholarship, they have to work a year of service in a federal or state agency. So that, those, we have a lot of that. We also have students go to security companies, local companies. There's a lot of security. There's a lot of tech around, you know, Baltimore, Towson, Columbia, Washington. We have students going, you know, to many, many different people. Like, having cyber, I think, even if you don't do strictly cyber, makes you stand out, right? Everybody wants a software engineer who knows cyber. I mean, that's just...
Well, everybody needs it. I recently read Barack Obama, and of course, our former president was recently quoted in a talk he gave that cybersecurity is the most, what he said, cybersecurity is the most serious economic and national security challenge we face as a nation. Former President Obama. It really suggests not just the importance of the issue, the criticality of it, but the need for well-trained professionals to be able to counteract these threats.
And there's a huge shortage still, a huge workforce shortage. Unfortunately, right. The job market is very, you know, tight right now. And so students are struggling to find internships, and that's across
tech. So Maryland is considered to be a national leader in cybersecurity here in our state. And we're training a number of cybersecurity professionals from Towson who are going into positions of great importance, not just in our state and our region, but throughout the nation and literally throughout the world. And these are people who are doing very, very important work protecting our systems, our infrastructure, protecting our national security and our national economy, as Obama suggested.
Well, I think that one of the advantages that we have is that our location.
Yeah.
You know, being so close to the nation's capital, and many of our students have parents or relatives who worked for the government. So some of them buy into that mission work, which I actually am a big believer. You know, that's a large part of why I believe the work I do is important. But it's not a hard sell, right? I mean, the students, they want to work to help defend the nation.
As you're educating our students, you're probably thinking about a range of vulnerabilities. I wonder if for those people who are leading organizations who are listening to this now, what you consider to be some of the most effective cybersecurity strategies could be and are for an organization that they might look to, as particularly as they try to protect themselves?
Well, one of the things that if we talk software again, because that's, I think that anytime I talk to any company and they hear, we start talking to our students. One of the work I did, have been doing for over 20 years, is introducing cyber very early in the curriculum, because it tends to be, and especially secure coding, think about the fact that you're writing a program and you're learning programming, and then when you're a senior, you learn about secure coding. That's not right.
It's too late in the game.
So we believe in teaching security early and often. And we have a project called Security Injections, which is used nationally. And we start in the very CS0 and start talking to them about, if you're ever in a group of people, then you talk about how to solve the cyber problem. They always say, create a security mindset. You can't, like, some of the technical things will not stick with people, but if they're aware and they think like an adversary and they code defensively, code responsibly, that goes a long way. So for companies, any company that I talk to, they're very surprised about what a good job we're doing with coding and talking about securing, coding securely very soon. We call it code responsibly.
Yeah. So we have programs in cyber. We have general programs in computer science too, in CS for short. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're suggesting is these kinds of concepts need to be integrated
everywhere,
including in non-computer science studies programs as well. I mean, I would think I'm a psychologist. I need to know not as much as your students need, but I need to know enough to be
cyber
able to protect
all,
myself.
Mark. Cyber for all.
Cyber for all. Well, you've called it that for a reason.
We called it that for a reason, because you cannot solve the cybersecurity problem with just technical solutions.
Yeah.
People need to the user, you mentioned the human interface as being the weakest link, and everybody needs to be educated. Everybody needs to understand about protecting their data. Everybody needs to be cautious of phishing and other types of things. So it is incredibly important. That security mindset needs to be across the entire organization.
Yeah, and that's been talked about quite a bit. Kevin Mitnick, a well-known security consultant, was quoted recently as saying the weakest link in the security chain is the human element.
Absolutely.
Absolute weakest link, right? So people can hack into our systems, but those users in the systems become, I guess, on a personal level, a real point of vulnerability.
Right, and I think not only does it need to be across majors, but it needs to start early.
Needs to start early.
So students, we're doing an event.
Before they get to the university.
Before they get to the university. And high schools are starting to do that. Middle schools, we have an event we call Junior Cyber, where we bring third to fifth graders, and we just start to talk to them about cyber and do fun events for them to get, you know, get in the mindset, to get that mindset. It's just being careful with, it's really, you know what it is? It's being a digital citizen. And that'll
and
come
digitally responsible.
Digitally responsible. And that'll be, AI will fit into that as well. So we need to continue to push technology responsibly into the, which is difficult because, you know, getting that, you know, Towson is a great school for this. We have we teach our educators, we have, you know, we do such a good job with education. So you make sure that cyber's a part of that, technology's a part of that, responsible use of technology. And then AI will be closely on its heels.
Yeah, well, AI is going to be an important part of this formula for success.
Yes.
Let me ask you one more theme of questions, and I'd really like to hear a little bit about this because you're on the cutting edge of training professionals who are entering the cybersecurity field. Tell us a little bit about how it is you go about training people. What are the kinds of things that you do, the kinds of experiences you like them to have, the kinds of knowledge, skills, and abilities you try to impart as you're training the next generation and actually the soon-to-be generation of cybersecurity professionals in our communities?
So Towson is very much cutting edge with cyber. We've been doing cyber for many years, and we follow curriculum guidelines. We're ABET accredited in cybersecurity. I was actually on the created some of these original documents myself. We follow the NSA designations, which is a way to kind of know what is, and I'm also on part of the organization that updates these. And then I would think we'd move into the cyber AI. But the other thing that we do, and Towson is very specifically involved in this, is we have a grant, I think you mentioned in the beginning, that looks at emerging trends. And the grant is called the Cybersecurity Curriculum Task Force. We work with about six other organizations. This is our second grant. Our first grant was $2 million, and this is close to $2 million. And the money goes to faculty to build curriculum in emerging areas from quantum. For example, we just funded the building of a lot of curriculum in quantum. The last grant we did a lot of in autonomous vehicles. Uh-huh. So just different, just to give you an idea of some quantum resistant cryptography. So we find faculty.
Wide range.
We find faculty, we do a reconnaissance and a gap analysis, which is the cyber terms. And we look to see what we need more, what's emerging, what we need more curriculum on. And we created a product called Clark, which is an 8-year-old product.
Yes, I've heard about this. And talk a little more about it.
So it's a very unique, and I'm very proud of it. This was about 2016. I worked at NSA as a contractor for 3 years. Took a leave of absence and worked there and worked. And we had a money to build curriculum, and it was close to $20 million. So we gave funds to schools all across the country to build curriculum in cyber because there's a huge cyber workforce shortage. There's a huge cyber faculty shortage. Mm-hmm. So we can't build a cyber faculty tomorrow, but we can help them. So we built all this curriculum. And then we also had wanted to put in one place. Okay. So Towson built a product called Clark. And that product was awarded. There were three other schools that bid for this. And that is Cybersecurity Labs and Resource Knowledge Base. Clark is now hosts about 2,000 pieces of cyber curriculum.
Wow.
Anything that NSA produces must be hosted on Clark.
Wow.
It's one stop, totally free.
Yeah.
It's
really a clearinghouse.
It's a total, there's nothing like it. And the cool thing about it is it's built by faculty for faculty. So, when I teach, and I'm sure you probably feel the same way, I can't use PowerPoint slides just given to me. Right. I have to change them. With Clark, you download it, you can do whatever you want to it, and it's totally Creative Commons, non-commercial, and they can use it in their classrooms.
What a great resource.
And it's all mapped to Bloom's taxonomy with learning outcomes.
Fabulous resource.
And so we ended up starting a nonprofit came out of Towson called SecureEd, and we've probably employed between SecureEd Inc. and SecureEd Lab over 80 Towson students to build both the platform and to review the curriculum.
Fabulous.
So it's just, to me, it's like I'm proud of it, not only because is this, literally there's no hooks with Clark. I mean, we continue to seek funding to build the curriculum, update the curriculum. But for the faculty, we have faculty come up to us and said, I can just use it, especially high school teachers. They're like, it's free, I can just use it. So yes. But what I love is that it helps the Towson infrastructure because we have undergrads who get development experience, who stay and get their master's, who continue to work for Secure Ed. And so, like I said, it's just been a really unique platform and opportunity.
What a great resource. And as I often like to say, there are many great universities in Maryland and at Towson. We also seek to be a great university for Maryland, not only one of the great universities in Maryland. And certainly that work contributes to that. Well, let me thank you for being with me on this episode, Dr. Blair Taylor, the director of Towson University Cyber for All, our Center for Interdisciplinary and Innovative Cybersecurity, and a professor in our Department of Computer and Information Sciences. Fascinating conversation about an issue that is more than important. It's really critical.
Critical.
Absolutely critical. And I hope our listeners have had a chance to hear some of the wide-ranging issues that are involved in cyber, because it's not a narrow little field. There's a lot of elements to this and a lot of pieces. It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle with the pieces fitting together. And I'm very grateful that you're one of the people helping to make those pieces fit.
Thank you.
Once again, thanks very much to Dr. Blair Taylor for joining me today in On the Mark. We look forward to having you join us again for another episode of On the Mark here at Towson University. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to On the Mark. If you like what you've heard, please give us a follow or leave a review. It helps to ensure that we can keep bringing you more candid conversations about the consequential work of higher education. If you have feedback about our podcast, I'd welcome hearing from you. Please feel free to send me a message at onthemark@towson.edu.
Founded in 1866, Towson University is a top-ranked, comprehensive public research university, recognized as Maryland's number one public institution by the Wall Street Journal. As Greater Baltimore's largest university, TU proudly serves as an engine of opportunity for nearly 20,000 students, the state of Maryland and beyond. Explore more than 190 top-ranked undergraduate and graduate degree programs and make our momentum yours at towson.edu.